You're listening to In the Name of God from Kingdom Come Trust in Belfast, Northern Ireland, an international faith-based show comprising music, news and interviews from all over the world.
Hi, I'm Raymond McCulloch. Welcome to our 16th In the Name of God show. We have music for you today from both San Francisco and LA, California and Missouri, USA. And we continue with part two of our interview with Dr. Kieran Martin from Delhi, India. We also have our usual faith-based news feature, Bread News International. Thanks to all of you who email us with very encouraging responses to our show. We really appreciate them. Maybe some of you would like to do a review of the show in your local iTunes store. You'll find an ING link on our website under podcasts. We started the show today with two tunes, The Fermoy Lasses and Brenda Stubbards, from a band called Crackmore in Los Angeles, USA. And we'll have more great music for you in a few minutes. But now let me introduce again my guest for this week, Dr. Kieran Martin. More than 21 years ago, Kieran began the ministry of Asha, which means hope in the Hindi language, in the slums of Delhi, India, and her work has brought her into contact with the Indian government, major banks, and with criminal slumlords straight out of Slumdog Millionaire.
Your work has spread from one particularly bad slum in one area of Delhi to quite a few areas. I mean, you mentioned the figure of 14 million, is that the population of Delhi at the moment?
Yes.
Which is almost 10 times Northern Ireland's population. It's hard to imagine for us here.
Yes.
And then what proportion of that would be living in the slums? I mean, how many people would be living in the slums in Delhi?
So that's about 4 million.
4 million people?
Yes, so that's about 30 to 35% population.
So the population of the Republic of Ireland are all living in slum condition in Delhi, in one city?
I would say that would be right.
And how have things changed? 21 years now Asha has been
ministering. Yes.
And you're responsible for some phenomenal figure of...
Yes, I mean, we're looking after 350,000 slum dwellers. That might be a little more than the population of Belfast.
Yes.
I may be wrong, but roughly.
It's pretty close.
I mean, it is, even in Indian terms, it's a sizable number for one individual organization to...
It's quite a responsibility, really.
It is a big responsibility, which of course I carry out with great joy.
But as well as growing, how have people's lives changed? I mean, initially you were just dealing with the cutting edge. People are ill or dying, or simple treatment can cure this, that and the other, or you can refer them on for operations and things.
Yes.
You've had some help from the Indian government, is that right?
Yes.
Where you've raised money, they have kind of at least equaled it, or...
The whole idea was to completely transform the living conditions of slum dwellers and not just offer them a palliative. Because palliatives don't really help people come out of their poverty. In fact, they make them even more resigned to their fate. And mentally, it makes them even more apathetic. And that's not really the solution. So what I have done is, in all of these 21 years, is that I have helped slum dwellers to be at the forefront of change by organizing them. And by organizing them and by help and training them and helping them to understand how to lobby the government, what I have done in these years is that made sure that our slum dwellers, through their own efforts and facilitation by Asha, have clean water, they've got sanitary services, they've got brick roads, they've got cemented paths, they've got nice drainage system, they've got toilets, they've got street lights, every single some child goes to school. In fact, last year, some children have now, in these 21 years, because of all the progress and development, some of them have gone to university for the first time.
That never happened before? Is it?
Never happened in the history of our slums. Not just in Delhi, but in the slums of India. You go to a slum in Mumbai, a slum in Kolkata, you go to a slum in Chennai, you will not even see children going to school. I mean, maybe some will go to school. I wouldn't say that no one will.
University is a pipe dream. It's just not going to happen.
Yes, absolutely.
But now it's happening.
They don't even think about it because they just think it's impossible. And this is the first time I was able to prove to our Indian government that it is possible if only we believe in them.
And it's worth doing as well. These people have value. So these people have gained self-respect and they've learned their value in God's eyes and in their own eyes. And the government have also had to respond and say, these people matter.
Yes.
Apart from the fact that they have votes.
Yes, of course. I mean, the whole idea was that democracy must work at the grassroots. Otherwise, what kind of a democracy are we? If it's not going to work among the poorest communities, then it's really no good. So my clear aim was to ensure that I work in such a manner that every single person living in the slum realizes that they're democratic citizens, they realize the value of their vote, and they're able to work together towards improving their living conditions. So today, they have all been empowered They all understand that they're as equal in God's eyes as anyone else's. They can have the same privileges, and along with that, of course, comes responsibility to be able to bring about a transformation. And this transformation, when I first started, I thought it'll never happen in my lifetime to this degree. But I've seen that God is able to do it, you know. And I've seen children whom I used to literally try and stop from flowing away in a dirty drain in the monsoon, today go to university. At that time, they were 2 or 3 years old, and today they're 18 years old and going to university. So in my own lifetime, I've seen such a major transformation, and I think that, you know, there's a lot more that's going to happen in the years to come.
So literally, they've been pulled out of the mire, and now some of them are university educated and qualified.
Yes, yes. They would fall in dirty ponds of stagnant water, filled with excrement, filled with dirt, filled with muck, filled with slush, filled with solid waste. They would go right in, and someone would jump into that pond, rescue the child, bring the child out covered with excrement and slush and dirt to me. And these are those children who miraculously survived their early childhood.
You didn't hose them down first, because you didn't have a hose probably?
Not with a hose, but with water from a bucket.
What water there was. How have people responded to the Christian part of your message, to the fact that you're coming to them in the name of Jesus? That's your motivation, and,
yes,
and that presumably they see that that is your motivation.
Yes.
What has been their response to that? I mean, are people in the slums, are they all Hindu, or are they just a mixture of all kinds of religions? Or
well,
what?
I would say that most slums will predominantly have Hindu people with some Muslims, maybe 80-20. But then it depends also, because some slums have a predominance of Muslim people living in them.
Because people don't realize, and I didn't realize until recently, that India is the second largest Muslim country in the world.
It is, and after Indonesia.
More Muslims than Pakistan.
Yes, the absolute number of Muslims in India is much greater than that in Pakistan, because of the size. But what I have been able to see is that because of all of these wonderful things that have happened in the lives of these people who've been living in such terrible and abject poverty for all of their lives, they have recognized that the Lord Jesus Christ is the God of healing. He's the God of restoration. He has redeemed them. He has reconciled them. He has brought so much joy in their lives. And we have worshipping communities in every single slum that we work in. They have embarked on a journey, and some of them realize who God is in their lives and become intimate and close to Him early in their journey. Some of them take a little longer, you know, to understand,
yes,
you know, what Jesus is and what He can do for them. But in all of the different slums, we have communities that are joyful, that are worshipping the Lord.
So there's a growing Christian church there,
there
right
is,
in the slums,
yes,
of Delhi.
Yes, absolutely.
Here I stand, lifting my hands, thinking of you only. Words can describe the feeling inside. Here is my heart all for you. You deserve all I can do. You are awesome in this place. In your glory and your praise. In the way that you cry to bring joy to your bride. And the way that you shake my face, my life. You are awesome in this place. In your power and your holiness. For you furnish the sky with the spark in your eye. And you gave us the waves in the sea. Be awesome to me. To your bride, and the way that you shape
my face, my life. You are awesome in this place. In your power and your holiness. For you furnish the sky with the spark in your eye. And you gave us the waves in the seas. Be awesome to me.
A beautiful worship song that from Danny and Seth Jeffrey in Missouri, USA, and awesome in this place.
Bread News International.
In this bulletin, genetic testing raises an age-old question: are the Jews a people or a religion? And Egyptian couple shot by Muslim extremists, undaunted in ministry. Jerry McCulloch reports.
Report from Compass Direct News. Rasha Shamir was sure her husband, Ephraim Shahata, was dead. He was covered with blood, had two bullets inside him, and was lying face down in the dust of a dirt road. Seconds before, Shamir could hear her husband mumbling Bible verses, but one bullet had pierced his neck, and now he wasn't moving. In a blind terror, Shamir tried desperately to stop her panicked breathing and convincingly lie still, hoping the gunmen would go away. Finally, the gunfire stopped, and one of the men spoke, "Let's go, they're dead." On February the 27th, lay pastor Shahata and his wife Samir were ambushed on a desolate street by a group of Islamic gunmen outside the village of Talita in Upper Egypt. One of the attackers pushed him off his motorcycle and told him he was going to teach him a lesson about running around or being an active Christian. The attack was meant to break the hearts of the Christians in the area, Shamir said. Both survived the attack, but Shahata is still in the midst of a difficult recovery. The shooters have since been arrested and are in jail awaiting trial, which cannot begin until Shahata has recovered enough to attend court proceedings. Despite this trauma, being left with debilitating injuries, almost $15,000 in medical bills and possible long-term unemployment, Shahata is willing to drop all criminal charges against his attackers and avoid what could be a very embarrassing trial for the nation if the government will stop blocking Shahata from constructing a church building. Because of his ministry, the 34-year-old Shahata, a Coptic Orthodox Christian, was arguably the most visible Christian in his community. When he wasn't working as a lab technician or attending legal classes at local college, he was going door to door among Christians to encourage them in any way he could. He also ran a community centre and medical clinic out of a converted two-bedroom apartment. His main goal, he said, was to help Christians be strong in their faith.
Report from the New York Post. Two new genome studies of Jews worldwide prove that the Jewish people are indeed a people after all. The first study by researchers at New York's Albert Einstein College of Medicine of Yeshiva University found that Jews across the globe share distinct genetic traits that are different from other groups and that trace back to the ancient Middle East. Researchers say the study, published in the American Journal of Human Genetics, puts to rest age-old questions about whether Jews are a group of unrelated people who share a religious ideology or a distinct ethnicity with common ancestry. The debate is over, said Dr. Edward R. Burns, one of the lead authors of the study. The Jewish people are one people, with a common genetic thread that evolved in the 2nd or 3rd century BC. The study, Abraham's Children in the Genome Era, compared the genetic analyses of 237 Jews, including Sephardic, Middle Eastern, and Ashkenazi, Eastern European, Jews, as well as an analysis of 418 non-Jews worldwide, and found that the Jews were more closely related to each other than to their fellow countrymen. Past studies have reached similar conclusions, but for this inquiry, researchers conducted a genome-wide analysis of the major groups of the Jewish diaspora: Ashkenazi Jews, Italian, Greek and Turkish Sephardic Jews, and Iranian, Iraqi and Syrian Jews. The study, and a second study in the journal Nature, scientifically undermine arguments challenging the Jews' historical relationship to Israel.
More information on these and other Bread News stories at kingdomcome.org.uk/news.
Now let's hear some more from Kieran about the impact of her work in Delhi and beyond.
Are Asha involved in any other cities yet, or is Delhi your main?
Well, we decided that we wanted to create a model that will be able to demonstrate how urban poverty can be alleviated completely and show a very high level of impact. So we decided we would stay in Delhi. But our model has been replicated by government as well as other non-governmental organizations, not just in India but all over the world.
So you're setting an example and others are following?
That's what we thought we would do, because the thing is that we've been able to demonstrate a very, very high level of impact. And the governments have been very interested in our approach of partnership and of all the different strategies that we use in order to obtain this. And so the government has replicated the housing program that we did in collaboration with them, our healthcare program, the bank loans. All of these different aspects of slum development work have been replicated by the government in other slums in Delhi as well as in India.
On other countries, did you say, have been interested as
well? Oh yes, I've been able to present the ASHA model of slum development to the British Parliament. I've presented it to the Irish government. I've presented it to the New Zealand Parliament. I presented it to the US House of Representatives. Because we have poverty everywhere, do we not?
And yes.
Even if it's a developed country. And the principles are much the same in terms of helping people to get their dignity back, helping people to get organized and realize that they have to work hard to get themselves out of their situation, and they cannot just sit there and wait for doles or for someone to come and just rescue them for it to happen magically. It's not going to ever happen like that.
And sometimes it's even more ignored because we don't expect it in the West.
Yes, I would say that would be right.
How important has financial or people coming from the West, you know, either giving their money or giving their time to come and volunteer or come and visit, how important has that been?
Oh, it's been very important. In fact, I would say that if we hadn't had that support, I don't think we would have ever been able to do what we are doing.
And where has that come from? Is it the United States or the various countries that you mentioned?
Yes, I mean, it's Great Britain and Ireland would be our major supporters.
Right.
You know, and that's wonderful.
And why is that? Is that because you had some contact there initially? Or?
Yes, I mean, we started off our relationship with Great Britain because Tear Fund was supporting us at the very start. Right. And that's how we got to know a number of people, Christians over here in this country, that just grew to appreciate what we were doing and recognized God working there.
And you have quite a lot of involvement of people in Northern Ireland now, is
I there? I do. It's been such an exciting journey.
Ballymena, Belfast.
Yeah. So many parts of Northern Ireland, and we've had churches, we've had so many groups come out to us in ASHA over the last many years. You know, we must have had hundreds of people from your country come out to volunteer for ASHA.
What do they do when they're out there? You throw them into the coal face in the deep end? Well, hopefully not the deep end.
They do a wonderful job when they come because, you know, they just throw themselves into the situation. They might paint a lovely mural on one of our walls in the children's rooms. They might brighten up the whole place. They might do some building work, like build a playground.
So they're doing practical things?
A lot of practical things, and then gives them a chance to understand the ASHA model, how the model is working. It gives them a chance to just see how people who are living in some of the poorest parts of the world are actually able to bring themselves out of their poverty. It also gives them a chance to worship with them because, you know, we are all ultimately God's children in His kingdom. There are a whole lot of different things that they do, and it's impactful for everyone. Even our slum people, of course, get blessed by their presence. But every single one of us that has spent some time in the slums, including my own self, have always gone back changed and much, much richer for that experience.
More appreciative of what we do have and what God has blessed us with.
Yes, yes. And also just the sense of community. The people there are so warm, they're so welcoming. They're modeling their lives after the gospel.
What about language? People coming from here probably don't speak any Indian language. Well, no, English is the common language in India, but I presume in slum areas English isn't that common.
Yes, it isn't at all. I mean, most slum dwellers wouldn't be able to speak English. We have had an English literacy program at ASHA that's been going on for a number of years.
So some people would speak English.
So there's a lot of children in particular who are growing up and now going to university and so on that are speaking English. It may not be perfect, but it's enough for somebody from here to be able to communicate with them. And then there are, of course, so many other ways of communicating that may not necessarily be based on the language, that you speak.
True.
You know, and it works really, really well. We have translators as well, you know, a lot of the ASHA staff translate.
You would welcome people to come and pay a visit and volunteer and experience what's happening there?
In fact, I would not only welcome, I would invite you to come and just enjoy the work that's going on, be blessed by all that God is doing, and also come and give off your talents and your abilities. Because the thing is, ASHA works in so many different areas. You know, there's healthcare, the environment, women's rights, child advocacy, finance, there's banking, education. So it's such a wide range of different interventions.
Everybody can slot in somewhere,
you know, that's the whole advantage of people coming.
Well, Karen, I really thank you for your time, and it's been very interesting talking to you.
I am standing on the edge of the water, and I am watching the wild birds fill the sky, and I am longing to be lifted up among them. I am not dying, I'm getting ready to fly. And these old hands tell my story. 50 years on, the Boston piers took their toll. Faded faces smile from those places I cannot return to. Till my days are done and they take me home. And I am standing on the edge of the water, and I am watching the wild birds fill the sky.
Is fading like an ember. But I remember a promise I once made. I said, dear Father, I'll be faithful forever. And as he draws near me, he can hear me pray.
From San Francisco, California, I'm ready to fly.
You've been listening to In the Name of God from Kingdom Come Trust in Belfast, Northern Ireland. If you would like to contribute to this ministry, go to the partner page under radio on the Kingdom Come Trust website. That's www.kingdomcome.org.uk. You can make a monthly contribution or a one-off gift there.
Join us again next week for more music, news, and the story of one man who has struggled with homosexuality and overcome. Slán agus banna tíre. Bye and God bless.